It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore the physical and mental hardship of migrant laborers toiling in Wisconsin fields, the efforts to organize around improved wages, humane living conditions, and respect for workers. That dates back over 50 years. Call in with a question. You can share comments. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jesus Salas is author of a memoir called Obreros Unidos, The Roots and Legacy of the Farm Workers Movement. Jesus, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Your memoir begins with your family in South Texas, Crystal City, and you take us then to the fields of Wisconsin in 1950s Midwest. Why did you decide to begin your story there?
Well, actually, I'm a third generation migrant worker. My father and my mother had traveled to Wisconsin as migrants in the early 40s. My brother was born here in 1942. My uncle signed up for Selective Service several months after Pearl Harbor and served with the Wisconsin Red Arrow Division in the Pacific. But the war intervened and they returned to Texas, and we don't start again until, as you cite, the 50s, when our family is now six boys and my mom and dad.
Your grandfather taught your father the route to get to the Great Lakes. What route would your family take to travel to Wisconsin? What was that caravan like?
Well, my grandfather had crossed from the state of Coahuila, the bordering state, Texas. In 1906, artesian water had been found, and they were looking for Mexican laborers to spread that resource throughout the floodplains, semi-arid but very fertile land. And he homesteaded there for several generations until the Great Depression, and that's when he was forced to leave the area and look for work in order to make a living. So he starts by going to the Texas counties, Gulf Coast counties first, then to the Panhandle, where large tracts of land were being put under cultivation. And if you've ever traveled...
Oh, I think we just...
Hello?
Hi. Okay, we just lost you momentarily there, Jesus. Go ahead on those travels.
Sorry.
Yes, no, that's okay.
Well, we if you've ever traveled from here to the borderlands, the point of Texas, and you get to the Panhandle, you're only halfway there. So from the Panhandle, he shows my father how to get first to the Plain States and then to Wisconsin, to the Great Lakes region.
Wow. And you mentioned this three-day, 1,500-mile caravan trip from Crystal City and then getting to Wisconsin and Hartford. What was that like for you to go on that trip over years as a young child?
Well, we were all huddled in the back of this 2.5-ton tandem truck, so with a canvas-covered top. And all that I wanted to do most of all, because I wanted to see where we were traveling for these several days, was to see where we were going, because we were all covered so that... Because we children knew how to speak English and were learning how to read and write it, as new members of the caravan, or new members of the crew joined us, my father farmed us out. And because we could read maps, they assigned us to different people who had never made the trip before. And we guided them with maps at the stops where we stopped to fill up with gas. We would help them with the change and the purchasing of goods during the travel, that kind of thing. So that was the best thing that happened to me during those trips. At least I could see where I was going. And, of course, I was helping other crews or families that were coming into our crew that didn't know how to get here and couldn't read maps.
Because it was possible to get lost in those times.
Well, this is, if you recall, the interstate system is built in the 50s, mm-hmm. and there was just constant construction of the two-lane highways that permeated the landscape at that time, so that there were detours all over the place. So it was very important to get somebody to guide these new families that were coming in and to read the signs and to follow the roads and to stay within the caravan, yes.
Jesus Salas is a labor organizer and author of a memoir, Obreros Unidos, as we talk about the history of the first farm workers union in Wisconsin. You can join in with questions and comments. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jesus, migrant farm workers were organized into crews to do the agricultural work. What was the structure for your family's working crew?
Well, the since we worked with other crews, let's say, for instance, when we harvested cotton, the crews were segregated into the African-American crews and the Anglo crews and the Mexican crews. In the cucumbers, of course, there were crews from the Texas Valley, and we were from Crystal City. So the way we were set up is that the males and the fathers were uncles were on the outside of the crew. Then on the inside were the unmarried women, and then the younger children close to our mothers and our aunts. And so when I start writing about the working conditions, I speak of women because that's who I started to work. I started to work alongside them because I was one of the younger ones, and my older brothers were towards the end of the crew. Along with the single males and my father and uncles.
What was it like to weed sugar beets in Wisconsin and using a hoe?
Well, at that time, there wasn't a very extensive use of herbicides, so that we had to remove all of the noxious weeds and grasses from the plant and also space them. And since we were the work crews were family based, and it was about women and children working in the field, so our fathers would take the long holes and cut them to approximately 20 inches, so that because we didn't have the upper strength to be able to handle the long holes, they'd cut the small holes, these long holes into small ones. And then we would be hoeing, standing over the rows of sugar beets and swinging at the weeds to remove them from the plant. So it was very arduous work. It was backbreaking work because we were stooped over most of the day, and it was at the end of the day we could hardly even stand up or walk very straight.
You write about the mental toll migrant workers took on your mother and your aunt. How did the work affect their mental health? I think you used the word that the mental anguish of work was like a communicable disease.
Well, I've never seen my aunt and my mother in that state. And here we were working in the fields. Let's say, for instance, I think I was speaking when I was talking about them, we were in Henry, Illinois. We were harvesting asparagus. By the way, we wouldn't come directly to Hartford, Wisconsin. We would stop in Henry, Illinois to harvest asparagus because the frost would thaw out earlier there, and the asparagus shoots would come out. So we would get several weeks of work there before we actually came to Hartford. So that that reference that I make to my mom and my aunts was during the asparagus harvest in Henry, Illinois, and there was no electricity in the labor camp. There was no running water. There was no sewer. So that not only did our parents have to get up early in the morning, get the wood stove going, because of course the kerosene stove just wouldn't heat fast enough for us to eat before going to work, and go out and work all day and then come in and not only cook for us in the before putting us to bed, but then having to wash our clothes. And since there was no hot running water, they built these huge cauldrons of water to boil and then put our clothes in there with a stick, move them around in the soapy water. In other words, it was nonstop work for them. And I note in my writings how their demeanor started to change. And, you know, at that time, there were no words for the mental conditions of any of us, including the mental conditions of our women. The words for loco, crazy, or loca, you know, for a female just didn't apply. But I started trying to look at their faces and define what was happening to them, and I can't do it because there are just no words. And of course, I was looking for words that we commonly use now as stress, those kinds of mental conditions as such. And I speak about my mother having to suffer an operation, and I going and seeing her in a nearby town of Peoria, and you know those flimsy nightgowns that they put on patients. I just couldn't stand to look at my mother.
Yeah. Yeah.
So very challenging times during our youth at that time, in particular what was happening to our women. And since I work closest to them, that's who I write about.
You could see those changes. Yes. Wisconsin activist and historian Jesus Salas has a memoir. It's called Obreros Unidos, The Roots and Legacy of the Farm Workers Movement. You can be part of the conversation about migrant worker rights. Call in with a question. Share your perspective at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We dive into the history of the independent agricultural labor union, Obreros Unidos, or Workers United, operated in Wisconsin starting in the late 1960s, and how this early push for better living and working conditions for migrant farm workers is viewed today. Labor leader Jesus Salas has a memoir about this time, and you can join in with a question or share comments, 800-642-1234. Jesus, in 1966, you organized this 80-mile protest march from Wautoma to Madison, and you give credit to the farm worker march by Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta as inspiration. What issues were you marching about in Wisconsin at the time?
Well, I didn't go directly from being a farm worker to being a farm worker organizer of a union. The venue for resettlement in Wisconsin was my father acquiring a small six-table cafe in downtown Wautoma, where it was the center of the migrant workers. And as I was working on tables, some individuals from Madison came over and wanted to know if I was one of the Salas who had been a farm worker and if I would take them to the labor camps, because they were organizing a demonstration program for migrant children. And for the next 3 years, I returned to the labor camps, establishing migrant centers. And over 3 years, we established seven centers serving over 100 children. But it was going back to those labor camps, and I viewed the migrant condition completely different than when I was a part of it. Parents started telling me about their wages. I started seeing the housing condition on a broader basis, the unsanitary conditions, migrants complaining. And as I was in Madison in 1965 doing a report on the migrant workers, somebody brought a newspaper from L.A. says, hey, look what the migrant workers are doing in California. And it was Huerta and Chavez leading a march from Delano to Sacramento in protest of the lack of recognition by the grape growers in the grape strike that they had enjoined that year. And so I said, that's what we need to do, just like Chavez is doing in California. So I got on the phone, and at that time, you know, I like to tell my friends, and they just get amazed, that they were actual operators at the time. in the telephone system, and you could make a person-to-person call, and if they didn't find that person, you didn't have to pay for the call. So I called Delano, California, Cesar Chavez, person-to-person call, and they found him. And I told him who it was, and I'd been a migrant worker and gone back to the labor camps and what I had done with the migrant programs, but that I wanted to do what he had done. And if we could use his the Thunderbird symbol, the flag of the National Farm Workers Association, because I wanted to organize a march. And he said that I could, and he asked me if I would support the grape boycott. So there started the relationship for the next 5 years, where you know, he mentors me in terms of initiating the labor organization, and he asked me to support him in the Great Boycott. Because at the time, farm workers did not have any rights to organize. They, if they wanted to have a representation in the union, they were just fired. The when the Labor Act was signed in 1935, the Wagner Act, agricultural workers were excluded. But here in Wisconsin, the state and our forefathers here in Wisconsin established a labor law that covered migrant workers. So the 5 years that we organized farm workers, we were under the purview of the Wisconsin Labor Board. So extraordinary situation of Wisconsin farm workers being able to organize and protected by the law, which Chavez couldn't do in California, because we were only of the two states, Wisconsin and Hawaii, who were protected by the labor law.
Jesus Salas with us, labor organizer, author of the memoir Obreros Unidos. Let's take a call now. Mark in Dodgeville. Mark, hi.
Hi.
What would you like to bring up?
Hello. Oh, yes, I was a friend of Francisco Rodriguez, who Jesus would certainly recognize. For many years, we owned hunting land together here in Wisconsin, and I got the chance to hear all kinds of stories from the old days. The early movement in Texas, La Raza Unida, which means the race united, was bringing people together to vote and run. And Francisco was the first city manager in Crystal City who was not white. There were 90% Hispanic, 10% white, and the white folks, us white folks, ran everything. So he's part of changing that. Then he came to Wisconsin, as Jesus has talked about quite a bit, and settled in here and did a lot to help other migrants come into the area. When he worked for Governor Tony Earle, he was the first Hispanic desk operator contact for the Hispanic community. And he got a law passed through the governor so that anybody going to school in Wisconsin who was a child of migrant laborers or came as a migrant himself or herself could get in-state tuition.
And Mark, how do you think this work, these efforts, have changed Wisconsin, your home?
Well, it's changed in some ways that many Hispanic people and other people, among and others, can come into the state and be more welcomed. And it has failed to change to some extent because there still is a lot of negative feeling among us white people, mostly about other people with accents, with skin colors that are different than ours. So it's been somewhat successful. It's been somewhat unsuccessful. I had hoped when I was younger that racism would die out during my generation. I'm afraid that hasn't happened. But I think that Jesus and Francisco and a number of others have at least brought it part way to where it's not as rampant as it used to be.
Mark, thank you for calling in. Jesus, go ahead. What comes up for you?
Well, the first thing that comes up is that my relationship to the gentleman that he mentioned, that is Francisco Rodriguez. We were both fellow farm workers here in Crystal City. We only lived blocks from each other. His father was a barber and a dear friend of my father, as was his mother with relationship with my mother. The important thing, I think, in addition to the contribution that Francisco and other migrant workers of that generation made, was Mark's reference to Francisco going back to Texas and helping the Mexican-American political movement down there. Or that is what Mark is referring to, is that not only is this a transnational movement, or that is the Chavez energizing the farm workers movement here in California and Texas, et cetera, but it's a transnational one, or that is the farm workers that organized here in Wisconsin went back since they were seasonal, and initiated political activities. And in our hometown, Francisco actually goes back and becomes the first city manager after cutting his teeth here in Obreros Unidos, or that is, in the farm workers movement. Great story. I'm glad that Mark brought that up, because it's a unique story in that these individuals are getting involved in the union here or going back to Texas and going back to Crystal City and getting the vote out and doing other organized activities that enhance their political status of their respective communities.
And that is labor leader Jesus Salas, who is sharing an inside look at the farm workers movement in Wisconsin and in Texas, his memoir called Obreros Unidos. Be part of the discussion at any point. Call in with a question. You can add your perspective along the way. The number is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. And we heard from Buzz, who emailed to say that they hoed beets for years in the Red River Valley in North Dakota, said it was hard work, and now the harvest of beets is all mechanical. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Labor leader Jesus Salas writes about the hardship of migrant workers and early efforts to organize. Salas's parents were drawn to Wisconsin's fertile fields for cultivating sugar beets and picking cucumbers and tomatoes by hand. His memoir is called Obreros Unidos, or Workers United. It's the labor union he co-founded in the 1960s. Call in with a question. Share thoughts in this discussion. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jesus, take us to the Libby's walkout in 1967. You organize a migrant farm workers walkout against the large food processor. What was your goal for this walkout?
Well, we had the protest march that we initiated in 1966 was a demand for enforcement of Wisconsin progressive legislation, minimum wage, housing codes, workman's compensation, et cetera. That fall, we went out on strike against a potato processor and completely inexperienced in terms of organizing a farm workers union. But we learned the hard way. And there are two things that happened. The other one was John Schmidt, the president of was elected president of the AFL-CIO, provided us with legal assistance so that we actually had a very concrete idea as to how to organize the union. And the organization the following year in 1967 against Libby's, we were represented by the lawyers who actually represented the state AFL-CIO and guided us through the process. We asked for an emergency certification election. We went out on walkout, but unlike the previous year in the potato processing, we call it a walkout because we went right back in. We didn't want the workers to be prejudiced or to suffer any consequences for walking out. We went to work the next day, but we brought attention to the Wisconsin Employment Relations Commission to call an emergency certification election, an emergency because of the perishable nature of the cucumbers. And Libby was the biggest employer in central Wisconsin. Of the 5,000 workers, they employed over 700, so we wanted to go right to the top. Some individuals criticized me and said you should have started with some of the smaller processors and established your ground game there instead of going after the multinationals. But we went after Libby's. We got the certification election, and we won the election 405-8. Or that almost a unanimous voting by the farm workers that they wanted Obreros Unidos to represent them. And we got ready to negotiate the first contract for the labor union here in the Midwest. And we met, and when we met with the Libby negotiators, they handed us a letter saying that they were pulling all their operations out of the state of Wisconsin and moving them to the Carolinas. And
where there wasn't that type of unionization going on.
Well, we sued them and petitioned the Wisconsin Employment Relations Commission to respond to our petition, because we said that they were moving their operations to avoid the union, and they said they were moving their operations just for a bottom line, because they thought that they could harvest the cucumbers cheaper in the Carolinas than they could here. Well, the case held up our organizational activities in the field. So the following year, Libby had three processing plants, the largest one in Hartford. So the following years, we said, all right, so you don't want to recognize our union in the fields, we'll organize your processing plants. So we organized three walkouts in their three processing plants. And again, to no avail. And that's when Chavez tells us, look, Jesus, if you help me, this is a crucial year. This is now the fifth year going into the boycott. If you help me win in the boycott in California, once we win in California, I'll help you win in Wisconsin. Well, I don't know why I believed them, but I believed them. I didn't know it was going to take another a couple of years to win the great boycott. But I moved to Milwaukee to organize the great boycott. And at that time, Wisconsin was crucial, because not only did we consume large quantities of grapes, we consume more brandy than anybody per capita in the state of Wisconsin, if you can believe it, Kate. So here I go to Wisconsin, and what's going on to Milwaukee? What's going on? Father Grappi and the commandos have been 200 consecutive days marching for open housing, and there the farm workers and the Black civil rights movement intersect, because I am hosted at 524 West National. They provide offices, the Archdiocese-funded program there. Three blocks down the street, Father Grappi's marching from the north side to picket Ellen Bradley, at that time now Rockwell Standard, because of the 6,000 workers. There's only a handful of Blacks and Latinos. So,
Jesus, what stands out to you from working with Father James Grappi, the Catholic priest, the noted civil rights leader, and in supporting the civil rights movement? What did you learn from Father Grappi?
Well, the I had met Lloyd Varby before, and I knew that he was suing the Milwaukee public school system for the desegregation of the Milwaukee public schools. So I was involved with that, and eventually petitioned in the lawsuit that bilingual faculty and eventually the bilingual program would be started. With Father Grappi, one of the most extraordinary things, and one of the things that I bring in the book, because as I was reading about Father Grappi, there was just such a negative view of his efforts. Then I talk about his personality, about how gregarious he was, how lighthearted he was. So the laugh that he had, how he just, enlivened the whole crew. He had joined the picket line at Cole Food Store when we were picketing over there on Capitol Drive. So we started working together. We marched together to Madison to the when the welfare marches during the welfare cuts were going on at that time, and we got removed by the National Guard. He eventually, the legislature sued him and enjoined him for the march.
Can we pause right there, because I wonder, yeah, how did the Welfare Mothers March on Madison, and as you talk about the Milwaukee Open Housing Marches, how did that intersect with the work to advance migrant worker rights in
The 524 West National in Milwaukee is only several blocks where the United Migrant Opportunity Services grant program had been funded. Mm-hmm. And so I would walk over there, just as I had walked over three blocks to meet Grappi, to the United Migrant Opportunity Service. And they were teed off in that all of the Anglos, all of the administrators were Anglos, and all the field workers were Mexican, and the mission statement was the poor should help themselves, if you recall. That was the whole mantra of the war on poverty. And here there were no migrant workers on the board. So I started getting involved with the migrant worker program in addition to working with Father Grappi. And one of the things that the way these things conjoin is that in the resettlement program, the state of Wisconsin administered to the county of Milwaukee would assist resettling immigrant workers, and so that UMass depended on the resettlement programs of the efforts for migrant workers who were being displaced by automation, and the support by the county of Milwaukee as the welfare funds were being provided, so that the cutting of the welfare funds affected the resettlement programs of former migrant workers who were being displaced, and that's how I got involved, how I joined the effort for the welfare marches, because it was impacting on our resettlement and retraining of former migrant workers in Milwaukee and Wisconsin.
When you cut ties with Cesar Chavez in California, there were tensions that arose between the two of you, and you eventually stopped coordinating with the grape boycott. Why did you two disagree?
Because he wanted me to focus completely on the grape boycott. And here I was getting involved with the civil rights movement and helping out the workers in United Migrant Opportunity Services in the wintertime. Like Mark mentioned, our organizers were going back, former migrant workers were going back home in Texas and getting involved in political activities, and I'd go down there with them. I spent my winters down there organizing. We could never organize the Libby's 700 workers in a 6-7 weeks period of time. So I would organize migrants in the wintertime down there. So I continued to do that. And Chavez didn't like that. He said, you said you were going to help me with a great boycott. What are you doing, you know, organizing and getting involved in political activities in your hometown in Texas? So that's where the tension began. But it was an amicable kind of a breakup. I just couldn't give up the activities that were going on from my homies in South Central Texas, former migrant workers like myself, and their activities with Grappi and the United Migrant Opportunity Services in Milwaukee. And so that's when we started breaking up. And I said, Chavez, this is as far as I'm going to go with a great boycott. I'll continue on a part-time basis, and we did. I continued working on the Great Boycott until 1970, when we won the first contract, but not traveling like on his behalf, where I would go to Philadelphia, I would go to Chicago, I would go, you know, travel all over pursuing the Great Boycott. I stayed pretty much between Texas and Wisconsin.
Jesus Salas's memoir, it's called Obreros Unidos, The Roots and Legacy of the Farm Workers Movement, as we discuss migrant worker activism in Wisconsin through generations. Call in with a question. Share what's on your mind, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore efforts to organize migrant farm workers in central Wisconsin in the 1960s and how an independent union called Obreros Unidos, or Workers United, it laid a foundation for migrant worker rights into the future. Jesus Salas co-founded Obreros Unidos and reflects on this era in a memoir. Call in with a question. You can share your perspective at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jesus, you enrolled at UW-Milwaukee, and you write that there were several barriers to increasing Latino enrollment at the time. What were those challenges like?
Well, while we were migrant workers, everywhere that we went, my father always placed us in school. And As I note, I graduated from Henry, Illinois, grade mm-hmm. school, my eighth grade. And my freshman year in high school, I went to three different high schools in three different states. So while I was organizing, I attempted to stay in school, just as my father was very anxious that I stay in college. So it took me 10 years, but I finally ended up here in Milwaukee. In 1968, when I came to organize a Great Boycott, I enrolled at UWM, and out of 25,000 students, as I note in my book, all of us could sit around one table. All the Latinos could sit around one table. And what became the urgency of the enrollment was not simply that that we were being denied access, but when we got involved with UMass and we started insisting that all the social service agencies actually have the poor, or that is the people that they serve, in their board, and that there be hiring of Latinos in those social service and educational programs. UWM became essential for the enhancement of their contribution to those agencies, and in fact to the community at large. So that we started to petition the chancellor's office not only to access school for Latinos, but to establish a Spanish-speaking outreach institute that would guide Latinos into financial aid, academic support, et cetera, et cetera.
And what was the resistance like? What went on there?
The resistance wasn't so much that the doors were going to remain closed. We eventually were going to knock them down. But the fact is, we wanted a program. We mm-hmm. thought that there was an essential need to create a counseling academic support program to guide the students. You know, at that time, you know, we need to say how segregated the community was. The UWM was on the other side of the planet. There were no communications between Latinos in the near south side, blacks in the north side, and the people who lived in the UWM area. And we wanted to get the Latinos and African Americans to start crossing those viaduct bridges and to start enrolling and participating in the classes that were being offered at UWM. So it was an effort that required us to engage and apply, and we started enrolling the students and demanding the program. And of course, they wouldn't give it to us, so we had to. One of the things that I learned from Father Grappi was direct action. And we never, the 4 years that I had been involved in the child care programs, 4 years that I had been involved in the union, I had never been in jail. But then when I started organizing here in Milwaukee, I couldn't stay out of jail. We were arrested at the Kohl's food store. We were arrested at UWM. We were arrested in our march for the welfare protest. So,
and you had to be strategic about these arrests and how bail would be posted. What was your approach?
Because the first time I didn't know that if you got arrested on Friday, there was no courts on the weekend. So we just sat around waiting for the judges to show up on Monday. Mm. Dumb, right? So we never got arrested again. Every time we went on manifestation, we made sure that there was bail money, that there was attorneys available to represent us, et cetera. Yes, of course, we learned the hard way.
Jesus Salas with us, labor organizer, author of Obreros Unidos. Let's bring in Carla in Stevens Point. Hi, Carla.
Hi.
What would you like to bring up?
I would just like to bring up that I love your program today. I heard it just by accident, and it reminds me of my childhood. I lived in rural Portage County, small town. We had quite a few migrant workers in the day that would come up. This was back in the 50s and 60s, and they lived in difficult conditions. From my perspective as a kid, I could see that. And sometimes in the winters, they couldn't get back to the area in Texas where they had come from, and they would be stuck in our winters here, and with no schooling, the Wisconsin school system or whatever decided, public schools decided that they would have a room, almost like a one-room schoolhouse environment, where they would educate these children. And my mom was hired to be their teacher. She had taught in one-room school, so she knew how to organize that kind of thing. And she was so good. And when I watched her and her close association with the public health department, at that time it was Ruth Gilfrey, a great public health nurse here, I learned so much from those two women and how they approached trying to help people without being suspicious of them or backgrounds or anything. Just help to promote public education and public health. That lesson stuck with me my whole life.
Oh,
and
Carla,
a lot of them.
Thank you for sharing that story of the rural Portage County in that era. Jesus, go ahead.
Yes, so we were talking about the establishment of the Spanish-Speaking Outreach Institute. The enrollment of UWM, I said, wasn't that the chancellor was resisting the access, but it was resisting establishing a program to support those students, encourage them, assist them in financial aid, provide, if necessary, the tutorials that they needed to survive. And we enrolled the students ourselves. We actually did a lot of work ourselves, but the success of the social services programs in the near south side, including at United Migrant Opportunity Services, and now the wealth of services that we provide is part of the success story that we established back then, where we enrolled hundreds of these students, and right now there is a network. We have the UMAS, we have the clinic, we have the just go down the line, and all the United Community Center.
And Jesus, we're almost out of time, less than a minute to go. But Andy in Manitowoc called in and wants to know whether the large number of migrants trying to enter the U.S. over the southern border, is that affecting the migrant labor movement today?
The back when we were migrant workers, over 100,000 migrants are coming to the Midwest, over 15,000 to Wisconsin. Presently, there's a little less than 5,000 migrant workers that come up, mostly male workers working in the food processing and meat packing, et cetera. There is not as much a field work as there used to be when I was working as a migrant, but there's still a great need for field work for migrant workers, especially in the processing plants. There is a cry for additional workers all over the place, and including the working conditions in some of the processing plants and meat packing. You hear about the working conditions. I think that we need to look at those further as these people join that workforce.
Jesus, thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you very much, Kate, for having me.
Jesus Salas, author of Obreros Unidos, The Roots and Legacy of the Farm Workers Movement. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.